Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Brian Windhorst about the play-in games for the NBA playoffs, as well as some injuries to some key players, and we'll show off our hockey knowledge when we talk about the NHL playoffs with Neil Greenberg. But first, we got to keep the sales weasels happy.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Previously on The Tony Kornheiser Show.
So in that amount of time, no fewer than 10 times, and I'm going 52, 53 miles an hour, so I'm going to clear the bridge in 5 to 5.5 minutes, right, at that speed?
It's two songs.
Okay. At least 10 Ram trucks, F-150 trucks, in the left-hand lane, going 70.
Minimum, you just say a truck. You don't have to call out the brand.
Minimum of 70. Minimum 70. Yeah. Laughing. Guy in the front laughing.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Got a lovely watercolor the other day from our friend George Mallet.
Oh.
Of Chessy. It says, the Chessy rendering, I just put paint to paper while looking at a picture Michael posted on X. What, X is Twitter, Michael?
Formerly known as Twitter, yes.
And did you put a picture of Chessy out there?
A younger dog. There's enough watercolors, though, for a gallery at this point.
It's very nice. And it says, George says, as I write this, Kentucky Derby is less than a month away. I am poised to make the same mistake I made last year. I love the Japanese winner of the UAE Derby, Forever Young. That horse was forced to run wide throughout the race at Maiden in Dubai, but beat some of the best young horses in the world in dominating fashion. The Japanese are getting better every year. Last year, Andy Beyer and I were both on the Japanese colt Derma Sotogaki. Andy may be moving away from Japanese horses this year, as I expect he will be likely to learn from his experience. I'm not as bright as he is. I hope you will ask him about Forever Young, which is exactly what we will do. Thank you very much for the watercolor. Appreciate it very much. We're going to do hockey today with Neil Greenberg, and we don't do a lot of hockey.
No, not really.
So I tried to get sort of steeped in hockey, and it's impossible for me. Yeah, but I'm not good at it, and so I understand it. But I did see something yesterday that did catch my attention, and that is that the Arizona Coyotes have left Arizona.
Yes.
They've left the land of Wilbon. They're going to Utah. They were sold and moved to Utah. But the owner of the Arizona Coyotes, or the previous owner as of yesterday, can keep the name, can keep everything, and if he can get a better arena than they were using, he can reestablish in Arizona, according to Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL. In the meantime, new owners, the people who own the Utah Jazz, will own the Coyotes, and they will call them the Utah something. They're not going to call them the Salt Lake City anything. It's going to be the Utah something. They made that very, very clear. So I got that going for me. I mean, I know a little bit about that. But I listened to Bettman, and Bettman said, you know, we gave this guy an enormous opportunity. We gave him years to build a better arena, and he couldn't get it done. So we decided to move the team. Do you know that they were playing in a 5,000-seat arena on a college campus?
What?
On the Arizona State campus? I mean, I don't know this because I don't really – not only don't I follow hockey very much, but I certainly don't follow the Western Conference in hockey at all.
No.
I can't name five coaches in hockey, and I don't pretend to. When you get a great hockey story, you dive into the hockey story on PTI – and you prep yourself in it, and you can say something intelligent. And we actually did talk about this the other day. It was happy trails to the Arizona Coyotes. They're playing in a 5,000-seat stadium. You can't You can't have that in the NHL.
No.
You can't have that in the NBA. You can't have, you just can't have that.
No.
You got to have 15,000 seats or else you cheapen, I'm sorry, you cheapen the entire league.
Sure.
And I'm sure Gary Bettman felt that way, right?
Yeah.
You can't.
I mean, even the A's, who are the Nomads.
They got a big stadium.
Yeah. Well, in Sacramento, it's like 15,000 or something like that, which they probably will never fill, but.
No, it's 10.
Oh, is it 10?
It's 10. But in their particular case, they're on the road to something being built.
That's true. Yes.
Right? This is a move that is temporary, theoretically.
Yeah. But even that is
the
bigger.
The Arizona thing.
That was where they did it.
5,000 people is all they have.
That's stunning.
And, you know, and then they showed all these people being very sad that the Coyotes were leaving. I understand that. I totally understand that.
So do the records go to Utah as well? Because he's holding on to rights for the name.
That's a good question, and I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. The Cleveland, when Cleveland moved to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens, the name Cleveland Browns continued to exist. And the Cleveland Browns records are the Cleveland Browns records. They're not the Baltimore Ravens records. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you'll go to Utah and just establish new stuff. And I think Utah will probably be Salt Lake City would be a good place for hockey. It's cold weather.
Yeah.
You know, that more people ski in Utah than ski in Arizona. Nobody skis in Arizona, not even Wilbon.
No.
You know, on the backs of javelinas on the fourth hole. But I just found that interesting.
So in some way, going back to the Arizona College barn, is it easier to keep ice in something that size versus if you get like a 18 to 25,000 seat arena? Just every year during the playoffs, there's always some story, but every time you open the door to do stuff, it just becomes that much harder to keep the ice surface.
Well, I guess they solved that problem by never making the playoffs. So you didn't have to worry about it. I don't know the answer to that, but I didn't even realize they were in a 5,000 seat arena. You can't have that. A pro league, unless all the arenas, like for example, they build soccer stadiums for the MLS that are around 20,000. No, because they can't fill 50,000. They can in some places, like Seattle, but they can't in all places.
Yeah.
So they build 20,000-seat stadiums with league approval. The WNBA has certain teams that are in smaller facilities. The Washington Mystics are in a 4,000-seat arena. Because they're not going to fill a 16,000-seat arena. Okay, but hockey, all the hockey fans in the world go to the games. The television ratings are terrible. They go to the games.
Yes, that's
so you can fill it 16,000, 18,000, 20,000. It's not good.
By the way, I think I saw somewhere that the demand for tickets to the Mystics, what's the Indiana team? The Fever?
Fever.
Yeah. They're so over the top that they're going to move that game into whatever the Verizon or whatever that's called now.
Well, they should.
It makes sense.
If you can get a turnstile count, you should do that. That's the Caitlin Clark effect.
Yes.
So I will continue with Wilbon. Wilbon and I had this discussion last Sunday, I guess it was. He's out in Arizona. I'm in Washington. We're both watching the Masters. He's, you know, he thinks the Masters is dull.
TV ratings down.
He said the TV ratings are going to be down. He said he had no juice for it. He was watching it. But he's in a room with 18 televisions. I don't know where this room is.
Command Central.
But it's a room with 18 televisions, and he's watching every NBA game. And he's telling me how great the NBA is, you know, and how smart it is to put all the games on at the same time. Okay, you know, I grant all of these things. But I said, at the ratings, the Masters is going to kill it. And he said, no, it's not. It's not. Because the NBA has done this very smartly, and the NBA ratings, they may not beat the Masters, but it'll be close to the Masters. And I said, I don't think so. Okay. The Masters rating was down 5% this year from last year. And that is probably attributable to a variety of things, but in golf terms, it may well be attributable to the fact that the last hour or so of the Masters was no contest.
It was over.
You know, Scottie Scheffler was up by sufficient amounts. He's not John Vanderbilt. There's no water. He's okay. Right?
You're also not tracking the Masters app, which is probably the best sports app experience across all major platforms. But yes, it likely comes down to the dominance of Scottie Scheffler, and he's not the most interesting guy just because he is so good.
Okay. So they got 9 million viewers. Now, mentioning Caitlin Clark before, at her best, she got 21 million viewers.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark brought in so many more viewers than watch the Masters by herself. It's by herself.
If Taylor Swift started attending her games?
Yeah, it would be unbelievable. Okay. The highest rated NBA game was the Laker game. It had 1.4 million viewers. That was the highest of all of them. Some of them had under a million. Some of them were challenged by the UFL, which nobody watches. Like, the UFL got 850,000, and that's right there with the NBA on this closing day of the NBA. The NBA does this all the time. They think, well, we got Christmas. And then the NFL says, you know what? No, we're going to take Christmas.
Yeah, that's
from
us
you.
Now.
You know, oh, we got this. No, we're not. Because the NFL is going to do it. And the NFL is going to blow you out of the water. So the Masters got six times what the highest rated NBA game got. And the lower rated NBA got 10 times what they got. And the Masters was down.
You are for these Wilbon therapy sessions. You bring numbers, data. I want to see what
Keller
your legal pad looks like for this. You're sharing the numbers just with joy in your voice. And by Wilbon's own, admission, you have putting all the games on together is great, but that's where you say we don't actually care about the ratings because of its importance going into the playoffs, and you're going to dilute the overall number because it's just spread across the entire league. This is what the baseball does every year to try and make the games count at the end.
Yeah, make it exciting.
I'm just saying that I have this conversation with Mike.
Go back to the numbers.
And I get the numbers from Kelleher, and most NBA games are under a million, which leads me to this question. Why do networks pay so much money for this?
It's a lot. They pay a lot.
Why do they pay billions of dollars for something that does not draw until the playoffs? I guess you just have to eat it until the playoffs.
Yeah. Right?
But Caitlin Clark, I'd buy Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark, three games in a row, just dwarfing the Masters and in turn dwarfing everything else. The second and third highest, the first and second highest rated games of Caitlin Clark beat everything last year. Yeah. Beat the World Series, beat the NBA final, beat everything, not the NBA or college football. Because nothing beats that. Nothing beats that.
Yeah.
I mean, Wilbon would go crazy if I said, maybe you could just get the NBA to play football because people seem to like to watch that.
A little more, yeah.
People seem to incorporate that
into the rules.
So that's really all I had. It's my way of saying I don't know anything about hockey and we're going to do hockey today. Please give me a pass on that. We'll take a break. Brian Windhorst will join us. We will talk about the NBA when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius read. Are you looking for something else you can do for your family this spring? How about shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year? Getting life insurance today means you'll have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to you, your family can cover expenses while they're getting back on their feet. Luckily, Policy Genius helps you compare your options from top companies, and their team of licensed experts is on hand to talk you through it. Policy Genius has licensed award-winning agents and technology that makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from America's top insurers in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million worth of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance. Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is our friend Don Stewart, who sent us millions of songs,
yes,
which we like very much.
We do. We do.
This is a song with a very odd name called Barnyard Martians. This is off Don Stewart, Volume 50. And this is about an incident that happened when I, meaning Don, had a small farm and a wife and kids in Texas, and a bad thunderstorm made a big stallion kick his way out of his stable and start running around in circles. This made my wife and kids start running around in circles, and I didn't know what to do. So as I was writing the song, I decided that evil Martians had attacked us and that all the farm animals, including the mice, banded together to protect us and are still somewhere in outer space fighting the Martians. I wrote the song about 2 years before you flushed the mouse. Had I known that you had flushed the mouse, I would have written that the live mice asked me to flush their dead mouse so that he would turn into a mutant, powerful, mighty mouse and fly into outer space to help them fight the Martians. That would have made the song much more interesting, which is a great line. And the song, again, Barnyard Martians, plays in Brian Windhorst. I'm just going to start with an observation that I made, not because I'm smart, but because I really sort of need to come up with something when we're talking about the NBA, because Wilbon's just going to eat the entire plate, and I'm going to have nothing to say. So I noticed, Brian, that we've had four play-in games. Four. Just four play-in games to this point on Friday morning. We got Jimmy Butler out and hurt. We got Zion Williamson out and hurt. We got Joel Embiid hobbled, and we got Steph Curry eliminated. Maybe they ought to stop playing these play-in games, Brian, because you're killing the roster of the NBA, right?
Well, that's the thing about injuries is the NBA has, you know, done everything it possibly can to prevent them, and they seem to be happening more than ever.
Yes.
And it's a reminder, while everybody's got all their finals all lined up already and made all these kind of assumptions, that injury is the big unknown. And that includes Team USA, by the way. I know we all celebrated their 12-man team being named this week. That's a wish list. If you know who's going to be healthy out of this group after going through the playoffs for 2 months, I congratulate you. But that is the big X factor in the playoffs every year, and injuries are more prevalent than ever, and you are exactly right. Already in tonight's play-in, you know, games, we got star players out, and even if their teams win, they're going to be out for the first round probably, and that's just a reality.
So I'm sure that the NBA studies this, and I'm sure they have medical teams that study this, and it's probably just coincidence, but more even than the NFL, where you only play half the game at most, you know, because you're on offense or defense. There's no sport that asks you to play a longer period of time than the NBA. And these guys get hurt. They get hurt all the time. Is there any sort of scientific data on this?
Well, the scientific data that the NBA said they used showed that playing fewer games and resting doesn't stop it. They came out and said that this year, which is why they started, incorporating, all these, non-rest rules. The Buddy Hield, who is now going to be playing in his first ever playoffs this year for the 76ers, he was traded over from the Pacers. He played 85 games this year.
Wow.
And this is one of the things, Adam Silver is championed for many, many things and protecting the players and whatever. But under Adam Silver's watch, the only thing he's done relative to the schedule is add games.
Yeah.
They've added the play-in game and they've added the in-season tournament game. And they've done other stuff like, reduce back-to-backs and reduce 4 and 5s and extend the All-Star break. Like, they've tried to do some other stuff. to protect the players, but I'm a big actions over words guy, and you know, the NBA over the last decade has only added games to the schedule. So when players get injured in those added games, you know, you keep that in mind.
82 games, and sometimes more, as obvious with Hield playing 85, and then every playoff series is, they're not 3 out of 5 or 2 out of 3 anymore, right? They're all 4 out of 7, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is one thing I always say, and again, this is a controversial statement, and it gets me calls from the league reprimanding me and whatnot. But people, I have all these colleagues in the media who come up with these big strategies on how to make the game better, and they spend weeks developing these 70-game plans and 65-game plans and all this stuff. And that operates on a flawed premise. That operates on a premise that the NBA's number one concern is quality. And it is not. The NBA's number one concern from a business standpoint, I'm not talking about the coach in the game or whatever,
right.
But from a business standpoint, the NBA's number one concern is quantity.
Yeah.
Now,
don't tell Wilbur this.
It's not that quality doesn't matter. It's just in second place to quantity. And so I always say to people, why are all the series best of 7?
That's just too much.
And I get these very thoughtful answers, but none of them are correct. The reason the playoff series are best of 7 is because they can't get away with best of 9.
I agree with that. I mean, you know, Wilbon and I go back and forth because Wilbon loves the NBA so much and doesn't think anything is ever wrong, but they play too many games. It just lasts too long. And the more you play and ask a great player to play 35 to 42 minutes in these games, the greater the chance he's going to get hurt. I'm going to go under the assumption that it doesn't matter.
All that said, though, Tony, there is something truly awesome about a great 7-game playoff series.
Yes.
The back and forth and everything like that. When it's done at a high level, it is something that we all love and we all strive for that. It's just it's sometimes hard to get there because of many things, including injuries.
I'm going to make the assumption it doesn't matter who wins with Miami and Chicago, that they're not going to do very much down the road. So I'm going to get to the next topic here, which is an incredibly sort of looming topic to me. Maybe to you, but I don't know. What happens in Milwaukee? What is going on in Milwaukee? What do they do?
Yeah, well, you've identified probably the biggest stress point in the whole league right now. The Milwaukee Bucks are probably facing the most stress coming into this playoffs. And here's the thing. Even if they were fully healthy and playing great, which is the exact opposite of what they are, because not only does it look like Giannis is not going to be able to start this series, but Dame Lillard is dealing with an injury in his leg. He missed some practice time this week with an adductor injury, which, you know, it's not a torn ACL, but it's not what you need from your guard who needs to have big games with Giannis out. And not only are they banged up, but even if they bring it all together and they can reach the conference finals, they're going to face one of the most dominating and complete teams we've seen in the East really since the LeBron Cavs. I don't know if they're going to win like the LeBron Cavs, but the Celtics are awesome. So even if everything was going great in Milwaukee, they were facing a real problem. And so they have, you know, they are an advanced age contender. You know, the way the league is set up, it's very hard to be a contender for 5-6 years. This is something the Warriors have pushed up against, and they kind of reimagine themselves. It's very unusual in the modern era. You just the way the star players want to move around, the way the rules are set up, and the Bucks are just a late stage contender. They've been competing for championships for like 6 years, and they did win one. It's unfortunate that they haven't had opportunities at others. There's been some unfortunate injuries that have hit them. But no matter what, even if they were brilliantly managed, and even if everybody was springy fresh, it's hard to compete at the highest level for 6 years. And so now their coaching situation and gambles look like they've not worked out. They've mortgaged all of their future draft picks and all of their tradable assets on this roster. And they are in a situation where they are playing not their best basketball and are out of position. And if they fail, there's a lot of question about what's going to happen. Where is Giannis's head going to be at? what's going to happen in their coaching situation? What are they going to do to try to improve their roster? What can they do? It's definitely a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I look at that as I wouldn't want to use the word fascinating, but I mean, I look at that as the most intriguing situation in the league. I do. Are you joining? I'll make this quick, I guess. You know, I'm going to bag this. I'm going to bag the thing about the Lakers in Denver. I don't care. I mean, I'm just tired of Wilbon screaming about how they can go six. Like, to me, Brian, pick the winner. Don't tell me they can go deep. You know what I mean? I hope when people say this can go seven that it goes four. I always hope for that because that you're not answering. You know what I mean? You're not answering the question. Who's going to win? When you say, oh, I think it'll go seven. Wilbon wants everything to go seven. And as you're suggesting, because he can't go nine. You know, because he'd want it to go nine. Yeah. So anyway. So let me get to the banning of this kid, Jontay Porter, who's probably not good enough to be much in the league, although he's got a brother who's in the league, who's a pretty good player. Can you explain the banning? And is it really banning? Or in a year, are they going to extend an olive branch and say you can come back?
No, you'll never see him again in the NBA. And he did, according to the NBA, he did at least three things that if he had been found guilty of even one of them, and by the way, the league decided to find him guilty. He doesn't get due process. That's not the way it works. It's not a, but he did three things that were all bannable. One, he appeared to alter his own performance for betting purposes. I don't know if you want to call it throwing a game because he threw him on his own self, but that's obviously a gigantic, huge red X no-no. Two, he talked with gamblers about inside information. This, to me, is actually the biggest threat to the league when it comes to integrity because the league they've taken steps to improve their injury reporting, but the league operates with obfuscation on a daily basis. And there's this big, giant paranoia and attempt to fool the other team, and that opens up pathways for gamblers. Routinely, star players we know what their availability is. The teams know what their availability is, and they're listed as questionable. And the NBA has fined teams for shenanigans with the injury report. They're trying to correct it, but they can't. Like, for example, the Clippers know whether Kawhi Leonard is playing in game one on Sunday. They know today. But yesterday they got Lawrence Frank out there going, yeah, I don't know. Hasn't practiced, you know, hasn't taken contact yet. Like, they play this game because they think there's an advantage to it. But I promise you, there are people within the Clippers who know. And if somebody gave that information to a gambler, it could affect how they bet. And so that's a big no-no. He was guilty of that. And third, the classic case, he bet on his own team. Now, he was technically, I guess, in the G League, but he was on the roster that Toronto Raptors betting. Well, first of all, you can't bet on the NBA while you're an NBA player, but you sure as bleep can't bet on your own team.
Yeah, right, right.
So any of those three, he'd been thrown out. What I find amazing about this, Tony, is here was a guy who was hanging on to the league by a thread, and the Raptors started to tank. They decided at midseason they wanted to keep their draft pick. If it was outside the top six, they had to send it to San Antonio. If it was inside the top six, they get to keep it. So at midseason, they trade Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby, and they go into total tank mode. They start shutting guys down terribly. There was a couple of players who had deaths in their families, so they were away from the team for an extended time. But the point is, the guys at the end of the bench, the two-way guys like this guy Jontay Porter was, were getting minutes. This is a guy who'd barely sniffed the NBA over 4 years out of college, and he was finally getting minutes. When he did this throwing, the second throwing of the game, which seems to be the most blatant one there, I think he threw at least two games, but the first game he kind of had an eye injury, and they can't really prove it. The second one, they think they've got him dead to rights on. He had played 20 minutes in like five consecutive games. One of the reasons why the sports books had a prop bet on him was because he was playing. And so here's this guy whose opportunity is to actually maybe get a foothold in the league and not only just show for the Raptors, but he's playing for every other team that are watching these games and evaluating these guys. And that's when he throws a game. That's what's so stunning to me. Like, even if he could have, they said he made 20 grand, but there was a bet out there for $1 million. But even if he had made the $1 million and split it with the gambler, whatever, aren't you trying to have a career? This is like your most valuable moments, and that's what's so pathological about it. You know, if and when he ever gives interviews, that's what I'm going to want to know, because he threw away his greatest opportunity of the life that he's working towards basketball. And that's actually a wild part of this story.
I agree with that. I mean, I think what makes this combustible is that the leagues now endorse gambling on every level and then say, oh, but not you. You can't do it. And this poor kid is in a situation where he's on a roster where people are making $10, $12, $15, $20 million, and he's making a buck and a half. And he doesn't even understand, probably, that this is his great opportunity.
Yes, he does. He's actually, I think, a pretty smart guy. I think he's a pretty savvy guy.
The choice he made was terrible. That choice he made is terrible.
But you're identifying something, Tony. I think where this is a problem is in college. And that's why the NCAA is moving quickly to try to eliminate prop betting in college.
Yeah.
Because there are college kids who are going to get to their junior or senior year and come to the realization, I ain't make it in the NBA. I will not make big money playing basketball. But there's prop bets out there. And or there's opportunities where I know information about my team, and I'm worried about it more at the college level. As far as the pro level, the pro leagues are aware there's going to continue to be scandals. They are prepared. You know, they would never announce this, but they are prepared to accept occasional scandal for the upside of all the revenue and fans that gambling will bring in. That's just a choice that they have decided they were going to make a long time ago. You know, in the case of this Jontay Porter thing, the leagues can actually champion this as the system working, because their oversight and their integrity units identified this. You know, within 48 hours of this throwing this game, he was deactivated. He was shut down. He never to be seen again. Now we can debate about a sports book taking an $80,000 bet that included three Jontay Porter over unders in it. As whether that sportsbook was exactly operating. I mean, what does that tell you? They were willing to take an $80,000 bet that clearly was suspicious. But I don't know that end of the business. What I am more worried about this in college, where there's literally no money in it for these guys, and they know that their careers in some cases are not going to make money. I think that's where the susceptibility lies.
This is very interesting. We'll talk about this again, because we're going to talk to you virtually every day, because this is all you're going to do for the next 3 months. This is all you're going to do every single day. Thank you, Brian.
Have a great weekend.
Brian Windhorst, boys and girls. That was really good.
Yeah, it was.
We will take a break. Neil Greenberg will join us when we return. We're going to talk about hockey, which we never do. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Hero Bread read. The carb fear is real, but carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love most. Mm. Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They've remade carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. I've had this. I've had this bread.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. I mean,
it sounds great.
Yeah, it toasts great in a Revolution toaster, of course, but it toasts great and it tastes really good. I can't tell the difference, you know. So if you have a healthy product and it tastes exactly the same,
why wouldn't
as
you?
A lesser healthy product? Yes. I won't say unhealthy, but lesser healthy. You know, then
I need to try this.
You know, then of course I would do it. I mean, you get enough fiber, you're cutting down on sugar, you're adding protein. Hero Bread has 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, 0 grams sugar. It's high in fiber. It's delicious and flavorful. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT, savory breakfast burrito, or mouthwatering cheeseburger. Hero Bread has something for every craving, including sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas. Tortillas are great.
Mm-hmm.
They're great. And they also have monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Somebody should send me that. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off on your order. Go to hero.co, and use the code Tony at checkout. That's Tony at hero.co. Use the code, people.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is our friend Don Stewart. And this is a song called Your Love is Strong. Don sends us a lot of stuff, and we play it all the time because we like Don Stewart. Michael, if people like Don Stewart, want to send in their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Good. And Don Stewart plays in with Your Love is Strong, Neil Greenberg. And we do this every year. We have a playoff preview with Neil Greenberg. And I just assume Neil knows hockey because I don't know hockey. But then I know that in the last year or two, Neil is just writing about betting all the time. It's possible Neil knows nothing about hockey now. Absolutely possible. But I'm a creature of habit. And so we bring him on for the playoff preview. Before we get to the playoff preview, I do have this question. And I actually think that... Gary Bettman sort of answered it last night in an interview I saw. We had two guys to 100 assists, and we had and that had not happened. There's only three guys in history until this happened with Kucherov and Conor McGregor this week on Monday and Wednesday. Until this happened, the only people who'd ever had 100 assists were Orr and Gretzky and Lemieux, arguably the best three players who ever played. And then we had Austin Matthews trying to get to 70, where only eight players have ever done that in the history of the NHL, which leads me, Neil, and this is something...
Conor McDavid.
What did I say?
McGregor, who's the
Oh, no, he's the fighter.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor's the fighter and the whiskey guy.
That's right.
No. Conor McDavid, who's a great hockey player.
Yeah, he really is.
Conor McGregor can't play hockey at all, is my guess. No. That's just my guess. But, Neil, I guess... Is this... Is scoring way up? Is this is this a one-off, or is scoring so far up that we're going to see this a lot?
I mean, scoring's not far, not tremendously up. Actually, it's a little bit down from the past couple years. I think it's just a function of having some really good young players around them. I think also some of it is the secondary assists have gotten a little bit more
liberal.
You see a lot more of those type of second assists, which are very nebulous. But not to have to take away anything from what either of them done. I mean, they've had a huge season. It's these aren't like fringe NHLers that are performing over their norm. I mean, these are, obviously Connor McDavid, who's been one of the best players in the league since before he, since he started. I mean, three-time Hart winner was known to be going to be one of the best. And then you have Kucherov, who's been one of the really solid players that no one knows about. Also a former Hart Trophy winner as well. So, these are two top-level elite players that, just ended up assisting on a lot of goals this year.
All right, there's a question that stands out when you look at the NHL playoffs, and it's different than other playoffs. In other leagues, we're often satisfied that the best team goes through the playoffs and wins. It's very rarely an outlier. It's usually a team that you would look at and say, yeah, they've got a chance. In the NHL, the team that is the best throughout the regular season and wins what is called the President's Trophy rarely wins the playoffs. Boston had the greatest year ever and got knocked out early. I'm pretty sure that the last one that won was Chicago in 2013, and it's 2024. The Rangers have won it this year. They draw the Caps in the first round. Why is it that the best team in the regular season, unlike in other sports, rarely wins in hockey?
Well, because hockey, a lot of people don't like to admit this, but hockey is a very luck-driven sport. And there's been a lot of studies on this. And when you look at the mix of luck and skill, hockey, it's been shown in some cases where scoring a goal is 70% luck, 30% skill, which is a huge number.
Wow.
And when you think about it, it makes sense because you look at some of the goals that are scored. You know, they're deflected off of a stick. They're deflected off of an elbow. They're, there's very few that are strictly just like a pure no doubt type of score. I mean, there's just a lot of fluky things that happen. So when you add that to a short series, you know, of seven games. You see a lot of variance. You see strange things that can happen more so in other sports, and a lot of that has to do with the goaltender. You know, it's no secret that a goaltender that gets hot is gonna lead his team to success more so, let's say, than just a forward, only because even the best forwards only play 15 minutes a game. So it has to do with player impact. It has to do with luck. It has to do with the small sample size of games. And, when you look at a team like the Rangers specifically this year, you look at everyone's favorite topic now in the hockey circles of goal differential. You know, there are teams that have better goal differential with less wins. So it looks like perhaps, the Rangers and also the President Trophy's winners before them tend to win more games than you would expect. So you see a little bit of regression in that way. So it's almost like a death of a thousand cuts, which is why you see some fluky things, especially the 8 seed upsetting the 1 seed, which we've seen quite a bit in recent years.
All the time. All the time we see that. Yeah. Florida seems
like
to do it every single year.
Yeah.
No, last year actually the Miami Heat did it, but it's very rare in basketball. Talking about goal differential, the Washington Capitals, -37, it's the worst record since 1991. And yet, do you think they have any sort of a chance? They have no chance, right?
I do think they have a chance, probably more than other people. Now, that's not to say, we're talking like they have a 20% chance for the betting markets. I think maybe they have like a 30, 35% chance. But the goal differential for this team especially is interesting because, you look at where Washington was this season. You know, you can look at the games that Charlie Lindgren, their goaltender, has played. Then their goal differential is only -12 in those games versus -22 for other goaltenders. You look at when Ovechkin started scoring again. Like, you take those subset of games and it's +1 goal differential. So it's a moving target in terms of what's the true talent level of this team and how much does, the goal differential that's included from October really reflect where this team is now. That being said, I think the Rangers are really good, even if you discount them a little bit, based on a luck factor. The Capitals are a true underdog in every sense of the word in this situation. But there's a relatively respectable chance that they win, albeit, it's pretty low.
I should ask you, I just assumed you know hockey and you still know hockey. Have you followed hockey at all this year? Do you know what you're talking about? It'd be nice
if
you
did. I do, yeah. Why? Okay. Why did I say that was wrong?
I don't know, because I don't know anything about hockey.
Yeah, I'm a genius.
I don't know. All right. Ovechkin's going to pass Gretzky, isn't he? He's going to pass Gretzky.
If we would have talked about this a couple of months ago, I would have been like, I'm not so sure. But
he is.
He had a lot of bad luck early in the season. His shooting percentage was way down relative to what we would expect based on where the shots were. He's got a good chance to do it next year.
Yes.
But certainly if he can play, he's going to do it.
So here's a question I have, and this is a betting question. We just talked to Brian Windhorst, and we talked about Jonte Porter and how he's banned now for, basically shaving points. I mean, betting either for or against himself, taking himself out of games so that prop bets could be realized on him. Are there similar things in hockey?
No, because, we talked about this earlier. You don't get the there's just not the the level of, the bar. So, like, for goals, let's say goals scored, you can bet over or under a goal scored, but the under is like minus 800. I mean, you have to put up $800 to win 100. And the limits just aren't enough. So even if you know, just for argument's sake, you know, Alex Ovechkin said, I'm going to bet money on myself and I'm going to pull myself out of the game so I don't score. Like, they just, there's just not that lucrative of an opportunity as there is in basketball, which is, for a starter, you know, because they have more impact in a bunch of different categories, you know, it's just a much different situation. And you can parlay those, et cetera. You know, I have to say, Jonte Porter is not a criminal mastermind by any sense of the word. I mean, to do what he did and think he wasn't going to get caught is pretty laughable. The only way it could have been worse is if his account name was like Ponte Jorder, and you know, like, you know, he tried to fool people that way.
I mean, if you wanted to do a bet, it would seem to me that in hockey, the goalie would try and bet on the goalie, right? One either to win or lose.
If you're looking to see like who's going to fix a game, I mean, certainly the goaltender would be the one. But you know, you can only have so many bad shots before you might even be pulled, right? I mean, and then you know, how early do you do that, and how, you know, if you're pulled too early, then maybe the goaltender that comes after you has a chance to pull the game out. I mean, yeah, there's it's difficult. It's difficult to fix games, I think, in this day and age. You know, it's not too difficult, as we saw, but the system worked, right? I mean, like, all the systems that they had in place to combat this sort of thing worked. And I think that's the best
all
thing
the whistles blew
it.
At the same time. Yes. They said, oh, there's too much action on this. We can isolate it. We know what we're doing. Yeah, no, all of the safeguards actually worked. What is the most typical bet in hockey? Is it win lose, or is it number of goals?
It's probably the total, the over-under, and then I would say probably the money line next. Not a lot of people play the puck line, which means, like you're saying, Washington Capitals are going to win by 1.5 goals.
They don't do that?
It's not very popular. I would say the most popular is the total goals scored in the match. I would say from a player perspective, it's obviously who's going to score the goal, and then I would say the money line after that.
Okay. Do you want to tell us who's going to be in the finals of the hockey for anybody who's still listening to me?
I actually like Winnipeg Jets. I think that they're a little bit undervalued team, especially in their first round matchup against the Colorado Avalanche. I think that if you're looking for like an underdog that can actually make their way through the playoffs, I think Winnipeg is certainly one to look at. I also like Florida. I think Florida, too, has been very good this year. I'm not breaking any ground there. They're one of the best teams in the NHL. And I always think Carolina is sneaky in terms of what they can do, because I think that their analytics department is the best in NHL.
You don't like Boston?
No, not particularly. Not because I just don't like Boston. I think like Boston and Toronto have a little bit of inflated win-loss records. They probably look a lot better on paper than they are on the ice. I much prefer, like I said, Florida, Winnipeg, and Carolina in that regard. I'm definitely not a big believer in Toronto. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost their first round series.
Thank you, Neil. We will get back to you when we have hockey questions, because I don't know anything. I mean, I don't. I really don't.
I mean, thanks, I don't know anything either, but you don't know that, so we're all good.
I don't know that. That's good. Neil Greenberg, boys and girls, we will take a break. Email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Framebridge ad. Everybody has things they want to frame. Everybody has photos they want to frame. Sometimes you have amulets you want to frame. You know, sometimes you have, I don't know, things like if you collect, for example, ball markers from golf courses you've gone to.
Sure.
You might want to put 6, 8, 10, 15, 20 in a frame for your own personal display. You know, that's a reasonable thing to think about and want to do. Framebridge makes it easy to get anything framed at an affordable price. You can easily order online at framebridge.com or visit a Framebridge retail store. You can either upload a digital photo for them to print and mail your item using their free, secure, prepaid packaging, or you can just visit one of their over 20 retail stores. Framebridge custom frames your piece in their studio using the highest quality material, ships it to your door in days for free. Framebridge makes it easy and affordable to custom frame just about anything. I know that Michael and Liz have a lot of stuff.
Sure.
By Framebridge.
Have
you used it?
Sure. I took a picture of a great blue heron right at his landing. It's a better photo than I ever had any business taking. And people were like, I'd like that framed. And Framebridge did it perfectly. Yeah.
They have a fair and transparent upfront pricing based simply on the size of your item. They also have a curated selection of frame styles with design experts on hand who make it fun to choose the perfect frame. Your happiness is guaranteed. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they'll make it right. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit Framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That is Framebridge.com.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. You got your emails, your faxes, and your notes. It's time for Tony's mailbag. We're gonna read some, all you folks.
That's John Ross.
Isn't that great?
Michael, isn't John Ross a golf pro?
That belongs in my OC playlist.
You know, isn't
Dad
there a John
the
Ross,
early 2000s
who's a golf pro, who's a teacher, a very good teacher in this area? John
Are
Ross?
Are you thinking of, I don't know.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But it's lovely.
It is lovely.
Do you want to do the Bethesda Bagel?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com, forward a location in the DC area nearest you, then pop one in, my friend, and you will be thrilled.
That'll do
I
it
think
for
you
us
might be
today
thinking of John Scott Rattan.
John Scott. Yes. John Scott. That's right. Not John Ross. John Scott. That'll do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, well, he walked up to me and he asked me if I wanted to dance. He looked kind of nice, and so I said I might take a chance. And when he danced, he held me tight. When he walked me home that night, all the stars were shining bright, and then he kissed me. And that, I believe, is The Crystals.
Yes.
And that is one of the greatest songs in the history of rock and roll.
Absolutely.
And the Beach Boys cover it so well.
Yeah.
And they do it, and then I kissed her.
Then I kissed her. It's, you know, really good.
And it's really, really good. It's one of the great songs ever.
And one of the great...
And Get a Table.
One of the great scenes of any great movie
Goodfellas.
Ever. Goodfellas. Yeah.
You want a table?
You too.
We'll get you right up here. Don't worry about it. Thanks to our guests today, Brian Windhorst and Neil Greenberg. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. Here's some emails. This is from Dan Baker. Dan Baker in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Living in Milwaukee most of my life, I have had the great fortune of enjoying frozen custard at the many stands throughout our city. Did you know that Al's Diner, featured in Happy Days, was modeled after Leon's Custard Stand on South 27th Street? Milwaukee's most famous custard fan is Alan Bud Selig. Gillis Frozen Custard Stand lies just a mile west of American Family Field, formerly known as Miller Park, and where Milwaukee County Stadium once stood. On a regular basis, Mr. Selig could be seen parked in his car at Gillis, eating a chili dog and enjoying a dish of custard. Thanks for all the laughs. What makes the frozen custard unique to ice cream is that eggs are used in the recipe. In all my 62 years, I've never seen chocolate vanilla swirl custard. I believe that is only available in soft serve ice cream. Well, I don't know that. Michael, you should ask our Milwaukee people if they are frozen custard fans.
I'm sure I'll get a text message from John and, And we'll see if Jim gets
in. You should ask that. Okay, let's see. This is from George Hunter in Katona, New York. That's upstate New York. Close in, but upstate. The recent discussion of soft serve ice cream or frozen custard with chocolate or cherry dips brought back a vivid memory for me. In 1987, after an evening out in the Philadelphia area, I went to an ice cream place on Ridge Avenue with my friends and classmates, Skip, Ralph, Jane, and her then non-classmate boyfriend. We placed our orders. My customary order at that time was a soft-serve vanilla with a dipped cherry bonnet. It was the red version of the chocolate-dipped variety. Jane's boyfriend, who was driving, collected our frozen treasures, turned to us in the back seat, and asked, "Who has the cancer?" referring to my fluorescent frozen red delicacy. I laughed nervously and took my berated treat from him. However, it made me rethink my choice of fluorescent red cherry-dipped ice cream cones from that point onward. The good news is that there's no known cancer as of April 17, 2024, and my friend Jane dumped this non-dip appreciating lout from my great friend Ralph, and they've been married for 34 years.
There you go.
Jane, Ralph, Skip, and I graduated medical school together in 1990. Please tell my brother Ed Hunter to eat it. Okay. From Sean Green, who is a sports director and news reporter in Wilmington, Delaware at WDEL. I'll give a strong second to Carmen's in Rockville as the best frozen custard in the D.C. area. But for the Delaware beaches, Core Brothers is nice. But you've got to try Dickie's Frozen Custard in Bethany. It's much thicker than Coors, and with the cherry dip, perfect for a walk on the boardwalk that is much less crowded than Rehoboth's. If you time it out right, you can park two blocks away and walk off your custard for free and dodge that new $4 an hour parking rate coming to Rehoboth next month. That's great. From Jeff Hicks in Gross Isle, Michigan. Dear Dr. Porthauser, your recent discussions about frozen custard reminded me that I used to manage a frozen custard store in my hometown when out of school during college summers. Some customers were fanatics for the frozen custard and would come back nearly daily during the months we were open. I used to do that at Carvel.
Every day.
I loved it. But most seemed oblivious to the fact that it is actually much worse for you than regular ice cream. Case in point, we had a middle-aged customer who would order an extra-large chocolate frozen custard cone 5 or 6 times a week. Mm. We didn't offer that size, but since he was a regular, we would charge him for a large and just make it extra big. We stopped seeing extra-large chocolate cone guy for a while, but after several months, we recognized his wife in line ordering a cone for herself, so we asked him where her husband was. Turned out he died of a massive heart attack one night after eating his last extra-large chocolate. P.S. The chocolate coating that hardens on the frozen custard or ice cream is actually a mix of chocolate and wax. It comes in large cans, and each can has about 3 inches of solid wax on top before it is melted and stirred in a pot before dipping. It is also the worst thing for you that you can order. And unless you want to end up like extra large chocolate guy, probably should be avoided. What a great email this is. DG, with all the talk about Carvel, it brought back a great memory for me. It was in the late 60s, and Richie Katz and myself were playing golf at Split Rock in the Bronx on a sweltering day, and we were walking and carrying. In the middle of the round, an older man in a cart with a gravelly voice asked if he could join us. We said yes, and as is protocol, we introduced ourselves to none other than Tom Carvel.
How about that?
He was the nicest guy, and afterwards, Richie and I had the best ice-cold Budweiser, and we were wondering what Tom Carvel is doing at a public course. Wow.
Isn't that great?
Wow.
That is a wow.
It's on his way to L.A. to see the kids.
Oh, well done, DG.
DG. Yeah. Good job. From Kevin Heilbronner. Kevin Heilbronner, Rochester, New York. You know, well, he grew up in Rochester, New York, but now he's in Wake Forest, North Carolina. Listening to the mailbag on April 10th with Greg Garcia in studio, or at Uncle Benny's table, rather, Jim Britt sent in a David Aldridge moment email about Pam Ward and Matt Hicks in an inflatable boat broadcasting during a hurricane on the Eastern Shore. I said, hey, I know that guy, referring to Hicks, who's the number two radio guy for the Texas Rangers. Matt is a U of Maryland grad who broadcast Mount St. Mary's Hoops for several years in the 90s and was play-by-play voice of the Frederick Keys during that time as well. This was his start in baseball before he moved up the minor league ladder in El Paso and Corpus Christi, eventually the Rangers. Matt and I crossed paths for several years in the Carolina League as I called games for the Prince William Cannons from 91 to 94. When Matt left the Keys, Matt Noble took his spot and I became the number two guy in Frederick in 1995. Matt can be seen in Major League 2, filmed mostly in Baltimore as Harry Doyles, that's Bob Uecker's radio statistician. He brought his own briefcase and media guides with him to the extras call and made it on screen. Hicks spent 21 years in the minors before he got the Major League job in Texas. Here's the dedication.
Absolutely.
Isn't that a nice email?
That's great.
From William Marcus in Maui, just visited your city and had maybe the most perfect sandwich ever, the Rustico at Patanjo's on Columbia in Adams Morgan. Please tell Michael. I'm in double digits for emails read on the show. I wear a 42 regular. Thanks. That's funny. Michael, we haven't sent out the prizes yet, right? Because I still have the coat.
Correct. We have received most of the addresses, so we will take care of that next week.
Okay. From Dan Moore in Winnipeg, in Canada. I'm currently watching Marcus Stroman pitching for the Yankees, wearing the new gray road uniforms from Fanatics. He looks like Albert Brooks in broadcast news. Sweating. Just sweating beyond words. From Sean Foster in Fremont or Fremont, Ohio. I don't know. First time, long time. I was listening to Pod last week, as is the normal routine. The people that listen, it just makes me so happy. I was listening to the Pod last week, as is the normal routine, and I heard Steve Sands mention the name Courtney Blackstone. I thought, I know her. Then Steve was on again this week, and he mentioned her husband, Mark, and I was like, hey, I know him even better. You see, I've been working with Mark at Domestic Uniform Rental for the greater part of the last 25 years. We're the largest family-owned industrial laundry in the United States, and we're going to be celebrating 100 years in business in 2 years. Mark is part of the third generation of his family to own and operate Domestic since we opened in 1926 in Detroit.
Oof.
I am very proud to be a small part of that tremendous success story, but the real reason I finally hit send on an email to you, to your high school class program, is to keep the DiMaggio-esque streak alive of mentioning Courtney's name on your show. Thank you for countless hours of entertainment and laughter and completely useless and irrelevant information to my life about the DMV. Isn't that nice?
That's that is
nice.
Lovely.
John Mossman. Listening to you use Flush the Mouse on PTI had me feeling like Carl Denham staring slack-jawed and wide-eyed as a giant monkey escapes its bonds and prepares to ravage New York City. What have you done? So at least somebody heard it.
Lots of people heard it. We've gotten some emails. Yeah.
From Luis Russell, who's a licensed psychologist in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. 2 years ago, I wrote about running the marathon and attending a Passover Seder with Josh Barr because I know his father. You made very complimentary comments, and I've saved the audio. Thanks again. 2 days ago, I ran it for the sixth time. That's the Boston Marathon, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Josh ran as a guide to a visually impaired individual, and they raised a significant amount of money for charity. It was a warmer-than-usual run and rather difficult, as if running 26.2 is not already a challenge. Kudos to Josh and his running partner for their accomplishment. By the way, I downloaded the show before I started, so I listened whilst running through these small Massachusetts towns. Isn't that nice?
That's great.
That's nice. Brett Hobbs, Linton, Indiana. It's the last one we'll read today. When you read an email on your podcast concerning the entertainment given by a bug zapper, I was transported back in my mind to my father's drive-in restaurant. 60 years ago, my father purchased an old Dog and Suds drive-in. Yes, yeah. He changed the name to Tony's Drive-In and added roller skating car hops and a more varied menu. The one thing he never changed was a 4-foot by 4-foot bug zapper sitting high atop a 15-foot pole in the parking lot. It glowed a blue light to attract a wide variety of bugs. On many a hot summer night, the parking lot would be full of trucks with kids sitting in truck beds eating their ice cream and watching bugs get zapped over and over again. The fiery electric show it put on was as magical to those kids as the 4th of July fireworks. Many years have passed since my dad owned that drive-in, but those who recall it to me always remember the bug zapper and the cheap entertainment it provided to our rural town. The connective tissue your podcast brings up is amazing to me. Bug zappers are fabulous. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Mom, press the crease in my chinos. Press chinos, I like to look neat.
Started kicking down his fence. He wasn't one to go on. same